Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National MS Society Supports to Help You Find Employment webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you'd like to ask a question during the presentation, please use the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator on the phone at any time, please press *0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, March 12, 2015. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chris Graham. Please go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Chris Graham, and I'm the Employment Manager at the Information Resource Center for the National MS Society in Denver, Colorado. Thank you for joining us on today's Employment Telelearning Program, Supports to Help You Find Employment. Many of us have lost employment at one time or another as a result of shifts in the employment environment and the ever-changing economy. For some of us, there are the additional challenges presented by MS-related symptoms and discrimination. Or some may be entering the workforce for the first time and are just learning about the programs and resources that are available. Whatever the situation, we likely have all faced the challenge of finding employment at some point or another. Our speakers this evening are going to discuss how their services can help you find employment. You'll notice that two of the presentations provided tonight occur in Colorado. However, every state has a state vocational rehabilitation program and workforce program, and you'll find links to locate the ones in your location at the end of each presenter's materials. These presentations tonight will give you general overviews about the types of services to ask for in your area. For those of you without internet access who are using printed materials, please note that the order of the presenters will differ from your printouts. You'll want to be prepared to move to the section in the materials that coincides with the speakers I'll be introducing shortly. Following the presentation, we'll open up the lines for questions and answers. You can ask the questions via the chat feature as well. Today's presentation is being recorded and will be available on our website shortly. You'll see the link in the chat section up above. And now let me introduce today's speakers. Sam Mankin attended the University of Northern Colorado for her undergraduate and graduate degrees. Her bachelor's degree is in psychology with a minor in human rehabilitative services, and her master's degree is in rehabilitation counseling with an emphasis in vocational evaluation. She's also a certified rehabilitation counselor. Sam started working for the Colorado Division of Vocational Rehabilitation in 2002. She was a rehabilitation counselor for a total of 9 years, which included being a trainer, mentor, lead counselor for 5 of those years. She became a supervisor in 2012 and is currently one of 2 supervisors in the Denver Metro District Office, which is the largest DVR office in Colorado. Russell Bowe provided the information on the Workforce Center that we'll be reviewing later tonight. However, unfortunately, he was unable to attend tonight due to unforeseen circumstances, and I'll be covering his material. Russell has a background as a human resource generalist before becoming to the City and County of Denver. He has a BA in finance, BA in mathematics, and MA in education, which helped him write some of the curriculum for the classes that Workforce Center offers. Adam Streets is the Director of Marketing for Getting Hired. Adam has worked in the staffing and recruiting world since 2007, and over the last few years has been redefining the Getting Hired brand and website to better serve people with disabilities. Sam, with that, I turn the floor over to you.
Okay, thank you for having me. All right, well, I'm with the Colorado Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, and as Chris suggested, I'm a supervisor in the Denver office, and I have been with Spoke Rehab for 12 years. You can go ahead and go to the next slide, Chris. I'm just going to kind of give everybody an overview of what DVR is all about and what you can expect, so you can decide if Voc Rehab is a place that you want to apply for services. DVR stands for the Colorado Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. Our mission is to assist individuals whose disabilities result in barriers to employment to succeed at work and live independently. DVR is state and federally funded. We help eligible individuals with documented disabilities to find suitable employment, and we are also a voluntary program. And documented disability basically means that it's a condition that can be verified by a doctor and or medical records. Next slide. DDR is not an emergency services provider. We also do not provide assistance with food, housing, medical care, or income. We can often provide you with resources so that you can get in contact with the right agencies for these services, such as county social services or the human services office. DDR is also not an overnight service. We're not able to help you find a job immediately. It's a very individualized process that we go through in order to make sure that you find suitable employment that is appropriate given your strengths and limitations. Next slide. Some offices here in Colorado, I'm going to kind of give you an explanation of how the rehab process goes. Most offices, we start off with what's called an orientation. This could be a group orientation. Other offices might have you watch a video or just meet with a counselor to explain the program. In our office, we have the group orientation, and the purpose of this orientation is to give an overview of the DVR program. The orientation is designed to inform you about the DVR process, tell you what you can expect, as well as how DVR can assist you in pursuing employment. The next part of the process, after orientation, for those who are interested, is the application process. Each office will provide you with the application form to be completed, and you bring it in to the scheduled appointment. This is a process that if you have any difficulty filling out the application, it's no big deal. The counselor can assist you in doing that. The intake interview basically involves, it's you and the counselor, and it's conducted to identify your medical, social, financial, educational, and vocational experiences. This is when DVR gets to explore your skills, abilities, and interests, and to understand your specific voc rehab needs. The next part of the process after application is the eligibility process. DVR is an eligibility-based program, and in order to be eligible, you must meet the following criteria. The criteria involves having a documented disability, that this disability also must create a barrier for you in terms of obtaining, performing, retaining, or maintaining employment. And we'll kind of talk a little bit more about that later on, what that means to have a barrier to employment. But the third category is that you have to be able to benefit in terms of an employment outcome and have a need for DVR services. Sometimes in order for us to get this information, if you have current doctors, a lot of times we will have you sign a release of information so that we can gather those medical records and get that information. For people who do not have any existing medical providers or existing medical records, we would then set those people up to attend an evaluation so that we can access that information. Okay, next slide, please. So here are some examples of barriers to employment for eligibility. We look at 8 functional limitation areas when we're determining eligibility. And just to give you a brief example, those areas are motor skills, which is kind of purposeful movement of the body. That could be gross motor, that could be fine motor, dexterity, anything like that. We also look at self-direction, which is the ability to make sound decisions, problem solving, reasoning. We also will look at mobility. So this is the ability to get around in the community, to get to and from work, take public transportation, the ability to ambulate and walk, wheelchair use. That all goes under this category. We also look at self-care, which is the ability to perform activities of daily living necessary to go to work. Communication is hearing, seeing, understanding communications, both written and oral, received and expressed. Another area is interpersonal skills, which is the ability to establish and maintain positive work relationships. And another area is work tolerance. So this is the ability to tolerate the demands of work. This could be the physical demands. It could be the psychological demands, emotional, cognitive, things related to stress, anything like that. And then the last category is work skills, and this is the ability to learn and retain information and then also the ability to then apply that information to the job. So an example for someone with MS, just say a person works in a physical job or a job which requires them to work in environments and temperatures in which the person can no longer tolerate due to the MS symptoms, we can then help that person get into a more appropriate a job with the transferable skills that they have, or we can look at getting retrained in an area in which they can perform with MS if necessary, if they can't return to past employment. An example of someone who would not be eligible for services is if they had a job that was perfectly appropriate for them, they can perform it and maintain it with MS, and they're being accommodated at work. Then in this case, a person would not be eligible for services because they do not have any barriers to employment. So even if someone really wanted to go a different direction, maybe they're, they have interests in other areas. Unfortunately, in our program, interests don't outweigh the functional limitations and the disability-related barriers to employment. So basically, just having a diagnosis or a medical condition in and of itself does not make somebody eligible for services. Okay, next slide. Okay, so now just continuing on with the rehab process, this next part of the process after eligibility, well, sometimes it's part of eligibility and then it's also after. So we do assessments. So these assessments are not only often necessary to determine eligibility, but they also help us to determine your need for services and readiness for work. These assessments could be medical-based if you do not have an existing provider that could provide us with medical records, or they could be vocational assessments to look at work readiness, job interests, and work behaviors. Okay, so then the next part of the process after further assessment, the assessment helps us also look at job goals, which is what we need in order to move to the plan for employment, which is the next process. And so developing an individualized plan for employment, also known as the IPE, this involves you and your counselor developing and agreeing upon an appropriate job goal, which means the goal must be for competitive, gainful employment. We don't support volunteer positions, and it must be compatible with your specific strengths, abilities, and limitations. This IPE will also include the services that are necessary to help you reach that employment goal. Please understand that each plan is individualized to each person, which means you may know someone else who receives DVR services, but they're, receiving totally different services than you are. This is because each plan is customized for you specifically. Once an IPE has been developed and signed by both you and the counselor can begin providing services at that point, substantial services, to help you in reaching your employment goal. Okay, next slide. After all necessary services have been provided, then hopefully the goal is that employment is obtained, or for some individuals, employment may be retained if you were employed at the time of application and just needing assistance to help keep that job. We also help a lot of people with job retention. So once employment is obtained, then there's follow-up, and this is a minimum of 90 days that DVR provides this follow-up, and this is to ensure stability in employment and to see if the participant needs anything on the job to assist them in being successful and performing their job duties successfully. After this point, after the 90 days, or it could be longer. Sometimes it's longer than 90 days. It could be, 4 or 5 months. But after this follow-up period is complete, your case will then be closed as successfully employed. And that's because we are a short-term work program, and that's our goal, is to get you employed and get you the services you need, and then we step out. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so I'm sure many people are wondering what types of services it is that DVR can provide. And the services vary widely depending on what you need in order to reach your employment goal successfully. You and your counselor will discuss what services you'll need to be successfully employed once you meet and are made eligible for the program. But an example of some of these services could be job placement. We do help with physical and mental restoration. We're kind of short-term when it comes to providing medical care. We're not like a medical insurance program, but we can short-term kind of bridge the gap sometimes to help people with certain therapies that they might need. We also help with assistive technology, something that's called work adjustment training, which is basically just building on those work skills and work behaviors to help you be successful. And we also help people with training in general. That could be short-term training or, higher education type of training. So this is just something you would discuss with your counselor. Some services require us to look for other sources of funding that we can use first before DVR's funding is used. So, for example, if you have insurance, then we would want to utilize that money first. Or if there's grants or charities out there that would be willing to help out, we would want to utilize that money first so that DVR is the payer of last resort. If you receive or an SSI or an SSDI recipient, then you're financially exempt from having to pay for services, which is nice. Okay, next slide. So is DVR right for you? DVR is a work program, so if you're not interested in working, we wouldn't necessarily be the right agency for you. If you do want to work but just need assistance in doing so successfully and need assistance overcoming some of the disability-related obstacles you've encountered or anticipate encountering, then DVR is the right agency for you. Next slide. Okay, so are you ready for DVR? Applying for DVR, you want it to be the right time. So you want to be ready and available to be able to participate. Every state might have different, different requirements. But in Colorado, you have to have documentation of lawful presence to be here in the United States. If you have upcoming surgery, then it's probably not the best time to apply, just depending on when the surgery is and how long of the time you'll need to recover and rehabilitate. You might want to wait until after you've recovered from that. Upcoming court dates, things like that, it would be nice to have that already taken care of before you apply, just so that, once you apply, we can just get cruising forward and there's no interruptions in that. And if you've also had a recent surgery, we also would need a medical release from a doctor. Okay. And then in Colorado, if you have any outstanding warrants, we like people to get those cleared up first. I'm not sure how other states are with that. And then if you are really looking for assistance in applying for SSI or SSDI, and not going to work at this time, then obviously, we wouldn't be the agency for you, but we can refer you to other people who can assist you with that. Okay. Next slide. If you do decide to apply for services, when you come in for an intake, there's a variety of documents that you can bring in that would speed up the process. This would be valid and current photo identification, proof of residency, and the rest are not required for you to be able to apply for services, but they might be helpful in speeding things up. And those would be things like any medical records that you currently possess to document your disability or limitations, a written medical release from your doctor if you were on restrictions. If you're not on restrictions, then that wouldn't apply. If you receive SSI or SSDI, we need a current, within the past 3 months, a current, like, award letter, some sort of documentation that shows that you are a recipient. It could be a ticket to work, anything like that. And if you do not have these documents but do receive Social Security, you can go to ssa.gov and request, it's a TPQI or BPQI. They might have changed the name on that. But they can send that to you. It's free. And we can also help you gather that information as well if you don't have access to be able to do that. Next slide. For more information, that was kind of a brief overview of everything, but for more information about Colorado DVR and to locate a DVR office, you can visit our website at www.drcolorado.com. And then for people that are not in Colorado, you can go to, there's a website on here, the askjan.org, and that will help you find the program that's within your state. They're not all called Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, but sometimes they're under different names, so you'll be able to find it on that website. So that's it.
That's yours. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sam. And, apologies. A reminder again that we will be answering questions at the end of the presentation. So if you have questions for Sam about the vocational rehabilitation process, please do write them down or put them in the chat. We are taking note of the questions that are coming through chat. Or if you write them down, you'll be able to ask them on the phone. We'll try to get to as many as we can at the end of the presentation. So thank you so much, Sam. And I will move on to, it's Chris Graham again. I will move on to the section from Russell about the workforce centers. And just as a reminder, again, for those who joined us afterwards, they are in Colorado, Russell and Sam, and so they're speaking about their office in particular, but these programs are available nationally and function very similarly from state to state. So this will give you an idea of what you can ask about in your area as far as possible services. Okay. So workforce centers differ from vocational rehabilitation in that they are open to anyone who is seeking employment. You don't have to be a person with a disability in order to apply. You could be the spouse of a person with MS. You can have no disability at all. Anyone who is looking for employment can use the workforce centers. You'll see them sometimes called as one-stop career centers. Russell let me know that they are no longer calling them one-stop centers. They've gone back to calling them workforce centers. But we kind of use that term interchangeably at the moment. So one-stop career centers are designed to provide a full range of assistance to job seekers under one roof. They are established under the Workforce Investment Act, and they offer training referrals, career counseling, job listings, and similar employment-related services. You can go in person, or many of the programs will have services that you can access through your computer or through remote services. So you'll want to check, and we'll have a link coming up that will show you where you can find the workforce centers in your area. You'll want to check to see if you can visit in person or how you'll be able to access those services. They're coordinated by the Department of Labor's Employment and Training Administration. They have, as I mentioned, a directory of centers. You are not obligated to go to the one that's closest to you. If you go visit one center and feel that it's not able to meet your needs, you're welcome to visit other centers in your area to see what kind of services are available to you. You can also call the toll-free helpline at 877-US, the number 2, jobs to see what ones are in your area. Typical services that are available to those who use the workforce centers, they have programs usually available for veterans specifically. Many offices will have an employment specialist who's available to critique resumes, offer career counseling, and offer referrals for many employment-related needs. They will often have resource rooms available where you can access computers for those who don't have internet available at home. Many job applications these days, you're required to do them online. And so if you don't have internet access, of course, you can go to the library, but you could also go to the workforce centers and get help accessing those applications there. They'll have copiers, faxes, and printers for those of you who need to make copies of your resume or need to improve what you want to be able to turn in to employers. There's often an opportunity to meet with staff if you need help using the computer. They sometimes can do some training if you're not familiar with using the computer and need some basics with that. Many of them will offer classes on hard skills and soft skills. Soft skills are things like writing your resume, interviewing, job search techniques. Hard skills are more things like learning how to use particular computer programs, completing your application online, or setting up an email. It's often important these days to have an email address so employers can reach you. If you are unemployed, which of course most participants are, there may be an unemployment representative available if you have questions about applying for unemployment insurance benefits or have questions about the benefits that you're receiving. Many will have youth services available for persons aged 14 to 24. And some will have on-the-job training where they've made an arrangement for the workforce center to pay a portion of the person's salary for the first few months while the employer trains them for the position. So it's an incentive to hire somebody who may not be fully skilled but who can be trained within 6 months to be able to complete a position. And the employer's motivation is that the workforce center will help pay half of that salary. It's not open to everyone. As you see on the slide here, it requires a referral from an employment specialist here in Colorado, and you'll want to check with your workforce center to see what arrangements are available in your location. The workforce centers often host or co-host job fairs or hiring events. They're a good resource for job banks, job openings if you're trying to find where the jobs are. Sometimes they'll have support services available, such as transportation, to help you get to job interviews. In Colorado, in order to receive services, you just have to go in and create a login and remain current in the database. So, again, you'll want to check with the Workforce Center in your area to find out how you can participate in their services and what kind of services are available. This is the link that I mentioned that you can use to locate the centers in your area. As I mentioned, they can vary from location to location. So if you visit one and don't feel that it meets your needs, feel free to try another one. They're a wonderful resource for anyone who needs help finding jobs, applying for jobs, or some of those techniques like interviewing skills to help you get jobs. And this link at www.servicelocator.org is what you can use to put in your zip code and find the one that's in your area. Okay, so with that, I will move on over to Adam, and we will start the presentation on getting hired.
Terrific. Thanks a lot. This presentation is going to be short and sweet and really around how gettinghired.com can support you in finding employment. You can jump to the next slide. Getting Hired started in 2008 with a mission to assist job seekers with disabilities to find employment. Over the years, our mission has stayed the same, but the way we do business and strive for that goal has actually changed. We manage the largest job board and community for people with disabilities online. We're fully responsive. We went through 508 compliant testing, and pretty much we want to go where you go. So we wanted to make sure that our website, all of our jobs, all of the account information, everything was available to you, whether on a desktop, a tablet, on your mobile phone, the entire website is available. So we reach out and look for ways to partner with our advocacy groups and service providers to offer added benefits to our job seekers as well, which is one of the big reasons why I'm really excited to be on this call tonight. But the biggest benefit for our job seekers is actually our relationship with our employer partners. So unlike most job boards, we take extra steps for our job seekers. You can go to the next slide for me. After you apply to a job through Getting Hired, that relationship with our employer partners really kicks in. We send out daily emails to these businesses and their recruiters about the applicants. Then we turn around and follow up on phone calls with the employer partners to discuss the candidates that recently applied to those positions. So the big question is, why do we do this? Well, the average job post receives 250 resumes, and recruiters receive that first resume in less than 4 minutes. With all of those resumes, recruiters actually only spend about 6 seconds reviewing a resume. Now think about that. You apply for a job, it goes into what you consider a black hole, a recruiter takes a quick glimpse at it and throws it with the other 250 resumes that just came in. By us discussing the applicants with the business, we're actually raising awareness on your application above those other 250. So our emails, they have links to take those recruiters directly to our account, directly to your account, and your resume within Getting Hired. So that's one of the biggest reasons that if you sign up through Getting Hired and you have a resume, it needs to be updated. We are being very proactive here to take that little extra step to help our job seekers get that job that they're hoping for. In addition, we ask for a little bit of feedback from our job seekers. This actually helps us gauge some changes that we have to make your experience even better. The surveys provide valuable insights and things for companies like the applicant tracking system wasn't accessible. The job descriptions are too narrow. All of that information actually goes back to the employer to help educate them so that they can make positive changes within their organization as well. Next slide. We also offer a number of virtual career fairs that allow you, the job seeker, to directly connect with these employers from the comfort of your own home. You have the opportunity to ask the company recruiters about open positions, the company culture, discuss the type of positions that you're interested in. And our past fairs have been very active, and we actually hear from our employers that they connected with people within the virtual career fair and they hired them. The greatest thing that we can hear from our employer partners is that they hired somebody from us. Our first one this year is actually kicking off on April 8th, and we're still signing employers on. But if you're looking for things that fall within a specific industry, we have those too. This year, we're actually offering several career fairs. One focusing on IT and STEM, another one on retail sales and customer service, a third one on healthcare, accounting and finance, and administration and clerical, in addition to two others, since we're doing five, that are more general that we have a number of our organizations signing up for. The businesses that we work for are throughout the U.S. So if you're in Colorado, we have businesses there. We actually have over 100,000 jobs posted on our site right now, and we work with over 170 companies. Oh, and the big thing about us is all of this stuff for a job seeker, the account information, the career fairs, you name it, it's free. We don't charge a penny for any of these services. We don't charge a penny to our customers for sending out these emails for our job seekers, having a call to let them know that you applied. We don't get paid for that. You don't pay us for that. So the job seeker accounts, applying the job, everything. That's all for you. So next slide. As an additional bonus, we offer a number of webinars and educational information. So we like to engage through social media. We offer career assessments on getting hired. The career assessment we actually have on getting hired, if you were to take that on your own, would cost you about $100. It doesn't cost you a thing. So please come in, take a career assessment if you're interested. Again, over 100,000 jobs are listed throughout our website, all over the U.S., every industry that you're interested in. We provide industry-related job-seeking content from a number of experts, including a lot of research that we do internally that we actually try to partner with outside organizations on to help educate not only the businesses, but educate the job seekers. So our most recent, just less than 2 weeks ago, I actually did an entire webinar just for job seekers on understanding the application process. If you missed it, that's no problem. You can find it on our blog. You can download our slides, the video, the caption tech, all of it's available for free. Next slide. Again, we want to be where you are. So feel free to reach out to us on our website, gettinghired.com. We are on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Google+. We really try to put out educational content, tips for your resume, how to get noticed, how to connect within LinkedIn. It's about the whole, everything that you can possibly do to help you guys find a job. I appreciate you giving me some time this evening, and I hope to be able to assist you guys in finding a job in the future. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Adam. I appreciate your talk as well. This is Chris again. I wanted to let you know that we may not have time to answer all questions live this evening, and if we're not able to get your question, we'll do our best to answer it via email, and I will be giving my email address again later. If you want to email me directly and let me know what your questions are, all of our speakers have offered to answer your questions after the presentation that aren't answered now. So with that in mind, operator, we're ready to take questions, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And one moment for the first question. And the first question comes from the line of MJ. Please proceed with your question.
This question is for Adam. Thank you, Adam, for your presentation. My question specifically is, in getting hired, do you also deal with municipalities, state, federal municipalities in getting hired?
Yeah, so we actually work with a number of organizations. So we work with everybody from the private sector to federal contractor to educational facilities to just about anyone. From an employer standpoint, the way we actually do business is we have a subscription process with the employer. And we do that just because we post all jobs for the employer, because we believe that a person with a disability can do anything that they want to, and we want to offer them any opportunity that's out there. So we're actually, we have jobs in all types of sectors, and we actually even have some that require security clearance if you want to work for some of our federal contractors.
Okay, very good. Excellent. Thank you, Adam.
Sure.
And the next question comes from...
Oh, go ahead, Grant.
The next question comes from the line of Karen. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. With the getting hired, is it only full-time jobs, or do you help place part-time people also? And
so,
And then would I, if I start going through that website, would I actually get some one-on-one verbal contact with someone from getting hired, or is it just like me sending my resume off on any other internet posting?
Yeah, so we offer full-time, part-time, temporary positions. Getting hired is, we do not do specific staffing or recruiting. We are a job board and a resource for that. So the way it actually works is you would apply through getting hired and apply on the company website. We would follow up on your behalf to make sure that the company has, one, received your application, two, has actually looked to see that you had an application in the system, and we actually have conversations to say, hey, what do you think? How do you feel that this person would be able to fit those requirements? In most cases, we get a lot of positive feedback from our business partners who are saying, oh, this is great. You know what? I'll follow up with them. That is actually the relationship that we want to establish. We want to establish the relationship between you as a job seeker and the business. If you have questions and concerns and you'd like to assistance with your account setup and things like that through getting hired, we do offer a 1-800 number, and you'll actually be contacted through one of us. You'll just be handed over to one of our internal employees. But the real relationship is supposed to be there between the company and the job seeker. We're just trying to elevate you a little bit more.
So basically, I'm trusting that you're trying to work for me behind the scenes, and I will hear from you if you get any feedback. Otherwise, it's just like applying for any other job through the Internet?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Chris here. Thank you for those questions. I'm going to jump over to Christina now so that we can have some questions from the chat section. Christina, do you have one for us?
Yes, thank you, Chris. Our first question comes from Pam, and she was asking about work from home opportunities and if the vocational rehabilitation program has resources for that.
Sam, are you there for that one? Okay,
are you there?
I'm
here. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you now, Sam. Are you able to answer that one for us?
I can, yes. Yes, we do help people with work-from-home opportunities. So basically how that works out is you know, when you meet with the counselor and we go through that individualized process and we determine, you know, what it is that you want to do in terms of employment, then, and if working from home is what you want to do and that's going to work for you, then we go out and seek employers and job opportunities which you can work from work. So it's very individualized. We don't have like job openings ready and waiting for people. What we do is once we gather what type of job that you want and what environment we're looking for, then we either the counselors or we have business outreach specialists or we have outside vendors who are job placement specialists that we can hire to work with you. Then they'll go out and seek those job opportunities. So we definitely do have quite a few people who choose to work from home and we have been able to make that happen.
Thank you,
wonderful.
Sam.
Thank you for Christina, do you want to do another chat one before we go back to the phones?
Sure. And this question looks like it's going to be for you, Sam, as well, about the assessments and processes that are done through the vocational rehabilitation program. Are some of them able to be done at home, or do they have to go in for all of them?
That's a very good question. Most of the time we do have people who – If it's an assessment that the rehab counselor can do with the person, then we could be pretty flexible. We are able at times to go into somebody's home if that's, you know, the best case scenario. We also can go out in the community and help people. A lot of the assessments are actually done at outside facilities. So, for instance, to get a vocational evaluation, which is an assessment to determine what an appropriate job goal would be, what your interests are, maybe what your aptitudes are. Those are things that are actually done at a separate facility than ours, and so they're not able to be done at home. So it just kind of depends on what the assessment is. Some things you can even take home with you, or we can send it, you know, mail it to you, and we can send it to you. It's like an interest inventory. Those things easily can be done at home, but it just kind of depends on what it is. A lot of the higher level assessments, like vocational evaluation or situational assessments, those are things that are done out in the community. So they're not going to be able to be done at your home.
Thank you, Sam.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That was very helpful. And granted, Christina, if we're okay moving forward, let's jump back and forth between one phone call question and one chat question. So, Grant, if you're available, do we have another phone question?
Yes, we do. The next question is from the line of Josh. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I had a general question for maybe not for the group here, but not through DVR, but do you tell the employers up front during the interview process that you have a disability? If it's not readily apparent to them or anybody else that you have something that could affect your employment, do you tell them the hiring manager up front or not?
Adam or Sam, do either of you want to take that?
I can. Hi. This is Sam. Go ahead. Do you want to go, Adam?
No. Go ahead. You go first.
Well, that's a very good question. It's a very good question, and it's a tough one too. Most of the time, you know, what we encourage people to do is if you don't need to disclose, then probably not. You know, probably I wouldn't go ahead and disclose during an interview. However, if you need accommodation for that interview, for whatever reason, you need some sort of accommodation in order to successfully participate in that interview, then basically what we would suggest disclosing is just the accommodations that you need. I would hesitate to ever fully disclose, you know, diagnoses or anything like that, because that's really not information that they need to have. What an employer needs to have is what accommodations do you need in order to participate in that interview, or once you're hired, what accommodations do you need to be able to perform the essential functions of the job? And so even once you're hired, you don't really ever have to necessarily tell your employer exactly what your diagnosis is. You have to have your doctor submit paperwork, you know, for HR, and HR might have that information, but you really don't need to fully disclose that if you don't want to, of course. So that's, you know, kind of from where we come, that's a tough one. It's a tough question. I would say if you need accommodations, go ahead and disclose that. If you don't need accommodations and you can participate in the interview just fine, I would say not to say anything. And then once you're hired, if you then need accommodations, again, that would be the time to disclose. But there are a lot of people that actually don't disclose. If they're able to do the job and they don't need accommodations, they don't disclose at all. So I'm not sure if that's helped it out. Adam, do you have any information for that?
I agree with you. The disclosure question, it's a very personal question, and whether you feel comfortable in disclosing to have a disability or not. The one thing that I will throw out there, though, is that because of some new rules that came out for Section 503, federal contractors are actually required to ask you if you would like to disclose a disability. They can't ask you what the disability is, but they can ask you if you would like to disclose it. And they will do that during your application process, during the interview process, and then after if you get hired. Again, it's your decision, and you do not have to disclose, but they are actually legally required to ask you now. But that only is for federal contractors and federal subcontractors.
Thank you, Adam. This is Chris here. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, Chris, I was just going to say to add on to that, I'm glad Adam brought that up about the federal jobs. Those are federal contract jobs. They're with the federal entities, federal employment. There's what's called Schedule A, and Schedule A is basically they target people with disabilities that are qualified, you know, to do the job. You get basically hiring priority. You get preference with the federal government, and so that's it. If you are interested in a federal job, what I would suggest is going into a voc rehab office and bring in your medical records. It could just be a letter from your doctor stating that you have a diagnosis and what the limitations are, and you don't even have to apply for voc rehab services. That's something that anybody, any rehab counselor, can just write a quick Schedule A letter for you. It takes about 5 minutes, and we can give you several copies to go and then apply for a bunch of federal jobs, and you never actually even have to go through the VR process. So I wanted to kind of throw that out there, that's kind of a nice perk. And with federal jobs, that's a place where it's a little bit, you know, it's okay to disclose because you're actually going to get priority in hiring, if that makes sense.
If you have a small limp or a small something that you don't need really assistance with, but it's just noticeable, is that anything that's put up red flags with any hiring manager?
I probably wouldn't disclose. If it's not a barrier yet, and it's not going to get in the way of you doing your job or needing accommodations, I personally would not disclose. I wouldn't even mention it. I don't know, Adam or anyone else, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. You don't have to disclose something like that. And the HR manager, they're not even really allowed to guess. So it's not like they could sit there and say, oh, I think they have a disability. They can't do that. So if something like that and you don't feel the need to, don't do it. It's not worth it.
Yep.
Good. Thank you.
Great question, guys. Yeah, that's one of those questions, like both Sam and Adam said. It's a very personal choice. Chris here, just to throw in one more idea that sometimes people think about. I agree that usually if you don't need to disclose the hiring, time is a time to talk about your strengths and abilities, and not to focus on things that somebody might consider to be a distraction from your abilities. But in some cases, particularly if somebody has a very obvious disability, sometimes they want to go ahead and disclose anyway, even though they're not legally required to see if their employer is going to be disability friendly. So that's another side of the coin. Although I think most people agree with the approach that Sam and Adam mentioned, and I just wanted to mention that you are always welcome to call the National MS Society and speak to our MS navigators with your questions about that, because there are many points to consider about if you need accommodation for the application, if you need accommodation for the job, if your impairment is visible or not, if you're doing a position that may have affirmative action, et cetera, et cetera. So please feel free to give us a call. And we do have some disclosure information on our website, which is www.nationalmssociety.org/resources-support/employment. Or if you just navigate through the resources and support tab, you can find our employment information there. Thank you guys so much. Okay, Christina, do you have a chat question for us?
Yes, thank you, Chris. This question comes from Wendy. She said, for getting hired, is there a level of disability in order to qualify?
No, there, we don't look, so we don't actually say qualifications. We don't ask you what your disability is. We don't require you to disclose it. That, again, it's a personal thing. So what we're trying to do here is that we're trying to connect employers with job seeker communities that potentially have a disability. So you don't actually have to disclose anything there, and there's really no level of what your disability is.
Wonderful. Thank you. Did that answer your question? Okay. Grant, do you want to move us over to a phone question?
And the next question comes from the line of Lisa. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, hello. I was wondering if you can help the caregiver get hired. I guess this one would be for Adam. My husband takes a lot of time taking care of me, but the time that he takes off doesn't have time to take care of himself in this situation. Could you help caregivers?
So the way
I'm
I
the one
to
with a disability.
That, okay. So unfortunately, the job board that we run is specifically for people with disabilities. However, getting hired, our business is actually attached to the largest staffing and recruiting company in North America. So we do have part-time, temp to perm jobs, and we actually have a couple sister companies that fall within the healthcare space that would potentially be able to find additional jobs or whatever industry that he's looking for. So if you'd like to follow up, I'd be more than happy to give you the information for contacting one of them, which is probably going to be the right direction for you.
Thank you. Yes, he's shaking his head. Yes, please.
Okay.
That's generous of you, Adam. Thank you for doing that. And I also wanted to mention that our workforce career one-stop presentation that I did for in Russell's absence, that is a resource that's open to anyone. So that would be open to your husband if he needed help creating a resume or finding job openings. He'd be able to attend that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I think that we are back to a chat question.
Hi. Sorry about that. The next question comes from Tina, and it's Sam, this one is for you. If you could address it basically to the group, asking about, you know, for the vocational rehabilitation program, is it just for Colorado? How do they know what state or what office to go to? If you could just address that a little bit. Thank you.
Sure. This voc rehab is not just a Colorado-based program. This is a federal mandate. And so there's a voc rehab in every single state. It's federally mandated. It has to be that way. And so it's really great. So if you're not located in Colorado, what I would suggest is going, we included the Job Accommodation Network website on there, which can help you find, a local office in your area. But also, you can basically just Google, like to say if you're in Minnesota. I would just put in Minnesota Vocational Rehabilitation, and it may not be called that. It might be called, you know, Rehabilitation and Education. Every state's a little bit different, but those are the key terms, and it'll bring it up, the link to that, program there. And we're all, you know, federally mandated, but under the state government. And so most likely you could go to the state government's website and be able to find it through that as well. And then once you find the specific state, most of the time, like how Colorado works, if you go onto the website, you can find the different offices. Or if you aren't really sure which office would be appropriate for you or closest to you, you can just call, in Colorado at least, you can just call any office. It doesn't matter. You can call the administration. You can call the Denver office. And we'll look up, you know, your zip code. We do it according to zip codes. And so we'll look it up and see which office that is closest to you. And then and then we'll give you that information. And sometimes, you know, your zip code might go to one office, but you're actually a little bit closer to a different office, and that's okay too. We can make exceptions for things like that. So ours is on the website. I imagine most states are on their own website as well, which you can just Google and it will pop up. Did that answer your question?
Hey Sam, this is Christina again. I just wanted to do a follow up to that question as well. If what office you would go to if you worked in one state but lived in another state?
Oh, very good question.
Would you go?
That's a good question. So if you worked in one state and lived in another, ooh, is it like a border, kind of town? I'm wondering. And I don't know if they'll have the answer to that question,
well,
but go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so, for example, I'm in Pennsylvania, and Delaware is really close by. So a person could be living in Pennsylvania but working in Delaware. So would they go to the office in Pennsylvania where they live, or would they go to Delaware where they work?
Very good question. I'm not sure what like Pennsylvania and Delaware's rules are, but here in Colorado, you don't have to be a Colorado resident in order to receive our services necessarily. So just say we have a lot of offices that are on the edge, on the state lines. Like for example, our Fort Collins office is right on the edge of Wyoming. And so, we can help people who are either Fort Collins residents find employment in Wyoming, or if there was someone who was just say in Laramie right on the edge, I would think that's a really very good question. I would think your first bet would be to apply in your state first and then see if where you apply, see if they will allow, you know, help you find jobs across state lines. We do help people with that. We help people cross over state lines all the time for employment. So I would think Pennsylvania and Delaware would be the same. So, but I would start with your own resident state first and start from there and see what they can do for you.
You caught us. That was a good question.
That was. I know.
For asking
that one.
Like,
I don't know what happened. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking with my work with folk rehab, and I do recall people in one state getting services in another state. I think the bottom line to the issue is that it's a matter of funding. So the office that serves you would need to agree to that because there would need to be funding addressed.
Exactly.
And
just to throw out there, we can't transfer cases from state to state. So once you open a case, just say you apply in Pennsylvania, and then you decide, no, I want to apply in Delaware, we can't transfer cases from state to state. So you'd have to then close your case in Pennsylvania and reopen in Delaware. So that's why I'd probably start with your state of residence first.
Okay. Thank you for that, Sam. And lots of fabulous questions are coming in over chat, and Christina asked for a couple moments to be able to sift through those. So, Grant, if you don't mind, could you give us a few phone questions in a row?
All right. The next question is from the line of Monica. Please proceed with your question.
Hello. One of the symptoms that I have had has been optic neuritis, which has some advantages for disclosure because most people don't really know what that is and they don't want to admit it. And that's just a thought. But the problem with it is that it makes driving rather difficult. And so I wondered if you had any experience with other clients of giving people advice about when they should start to think about getting a job where there's public transportation and how to go about kind of sifting through employers to get those that would be accessible by public transportation. That's kind of a complex question.
Sam, you want that or you want me to take it?
Go ahead and take a shot at that one.
I can
piggyback on.
Yeah, so I'm not going to lie. I don't know what those symptoms are for the optical neuritis. So I'll throw that out there first. But the big thing for us is we offer kind of resources So there's a lot of public transportation organizations out there that are trying to help people with disabilities get to employment. I think that's almost the accommodation that if you're thinking about it now, it should be something that you're thinking about ahead of time about, you know, where is this job location, and the accommodation that comes with that may not just be the transportation piece, but it may actually be adjusted work schedule as well. I know that there are individuals that work with us that have to use public transportation, and they actually have to have a different work schedule because of the time that public transportation gets to the office. So I'm pretty sure that is an ask for the employer that you're getting ready to work with, and how flexible they are around those types of things. Outside of that, there are organizations that I'm not going to say businesses will pay for it, but there's options out there to have transportation be able to pick you up and bring you into an office depending on location and distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a tough one. I agree with what Adam said, that I would just, you know, plan ahead in advance for that, since you know, if you know that's the route that you're going, and then you know, just look for employers that are you know, on bus lines and public transportation, and just look for things in those areas.
It does take a coordinated effort, certainly, to try to match up, you know, who's going to be on a transportation line. And also, at some point, depending on what's going on, you may want to explore paratransit if that's appropriate. And that's one of those things, again, if you wanted to give us a call to see who provides paratransit in your area, that's something we typically have in our database here at the Information Resource Center for the society. So please feel free to give us a call if you need help exploring transportation options. But it's very smart to be thinking ahead, and if you think you have symptoms that are going to impair your ability to drive at some point, that you start looking at whether you're going to be able to continue at your current job site or find something that is on an accessible route. Thank you. Did that answer that question for you then?
That was a very good answer, and I think it was particularly good to point out that a schedule change could be a great accommodation in that situation.
Fantastic. Good. Okay, thank you so much. Grant, do you have another question for us?
And the next question comes from the line of MJ. It is a follow-up. Please proceed with your question. And MJ, your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Sorry about that. Okay, so my question has to do with I realize that some work-at-home opportunities are as an employee. Many, however, are independent contract work, which have tax implications. And I'm just wondering if someone can just talk to what those implications may be in deciding if that might be something that you might want to do as a work-from-home person.
So I'll start to field that question. So. Yeah, you're asking about the difference between a full-time employee and a 1099. The 1099 contractor, we'll call them a contractor here. They basically would be required to have their own health insurance, pay all of their own taxes, and it's the burden really falls on that private contractor to handle all of that. The best benefit for you is looking for a business that allows for telecommuting, that you are an actual internal employee, because at that point they deduct some of the taxes out for you. And I'm going to speak from a personal space because I've owned my own business. So I have paid taxes both from a business standpoint and from an employee standpoint within that business. So in my recommendation, looking for an organization that allows for telecommuting where they would actually be the employer of you would be in your best interest, unless you want to go through setting up your 1099, your business, your LLCs, things like that, to be a private contractor.
Is there anyone that would be able to assist with that?
Yeah, I can jump in on this one, Adam.
Okay.
Through Voc Rehab, we have a self-employment program, actually. So we have they're called Rehab Counselors for Entrepreneurship, and they are kind of experts in the area of business and self-employment. And so you could apply, you know, to Voc Rehab services. And it's a pretty heavy process. It's not you know, we take it pretty seriously because many small businesses fail, and so we want to make sure that we're helping the person to be as successful as possible. But you write a business plan, and you present your business idea to a panel of business professionals, and then if they accept it, from there, the RCEs, the counselor for self-employment, can then help you with all of that. They help you with the business, they help you figure out, you know, advertisement and startup costs, and we can help pay for certain parts of the process. There are some things we can pay for, and there are some things we can't. I'm not the expert in self-employment. I'll just throw that out there right now. That's not my area of expertise, so I'm not going to go too much further into that piece of what we can pay for and what we can't, but we certainly have people that can help you if you decide being an independent contractor or being self-employed is the way to go, and that's what you want to do. I'd say apply to Voc Rehab, and we have people that can help you. And you can also go to the Small Business Administration. They're very, very helpful. You can just, and I doesn't cost anything. You could just go there and say, I have a business idea. This is what I want to do, and they'll actually help you with a business plan and figuring out the taxes and all that. They're very good at that, and they're a free resource.
Great. Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thank you. And that is a perfect segue for me to jump in and just put out a reminder for those of you who may not have seen what the next and final Employment Telelearning Series call is going to be. The topic is actually the Essential Guide to Flexible and Home-Based Jobs. That's going to be held at March 26th in 2 weeks at the same time. So if you haven't already registered for that one, or if you've developed an interest in learning some more about some possible work from home opportunities, you can go to our website at /telelearning to find information about that program, or again, give us a call at 1-800-344-4867 and have one of our staff assist you in registering for that. Okay, I think we have one last chat question before we go back to the phones. Christina, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Chris. We have a question from Kathy that says, I am an executive assistant and my disability is cognitive, and I have trouble with multitasking and details. Is the vocational rehabilitation program able to help? Sorry, the question just disappeared from me. Is a Voc Rehab able to help with how to deal with that better?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great example of a job retention situation where somebody would apply. You would definitely be eligible for services because you're sounds like you're having a hard time performing certain aspects of the job due to your disability. So that is absolutely something we can do. We have people, we can set you up with experts that can help you to come up with some compensatory strategies, some organizational skills, anything like that can help you to better perform your job. We also have job coaches that can actually go on the job with you to, you know, if that was something you were comfortable with, to kind of figure out what exactly are your job duties, where are you kind of stepping up, you know, in some areas where you running into some barriers, and then they can help help you by coaching you through that and figuring out some other ways for you to be able to successfully complete those job tasks. We also have occupational therapists that we can set you up with that are very good at things like that in that area. So, yes, I would say that's a great example, a perfect situation of where Voc Rehab can come in and help you with that.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sam, for that. Grant, any more questions on the phone?
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder to register for a question, please press 1-4.
While we're waiting to see if we have any last questions, we're about to reach the end of the recording, and I wanted to remind you all, I saw quite a few questions come through on chat that were wonderful individual questions that we're not going to have time to answer now, but we will be following up with you to get you the answers to those questions as soon as we can. Please do give us some time to respond to you. It looks like there are quite a few, and it might take us some time to get back, but we will do our best to make sure that we answer all of the questions that you posted on chat tonight. And this is another opportunity for me to remind you that we do have our MS navigators here who can assist you in getting connected to resources like the State Vocational Rehabilitation Program in your area, the workforce centers, and resources like Adams Getting Hired organization. So please always do feel free to give us a call. Same thing again, it's 1-800-344-4867. We're open from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mountain Time, Monday through Friday. Request one of our MS navigators, and we'll be able to assist you in getting connected to those resources. As Steve mentioned in the chat section, in case you're not on the chat, this will be posted as soon as we're able to on our Telelearning Series page on the National MS Society website. And so please feel free if you want to review any of this information or want to be able to see through the slides again, please do feel free to go to that page in a few days and we should have the recording posted there. And now one last call for any more questions. Grant and Christina, do we have any more?
There is one question on the phone from the line of Tisha. Please proceed with your question.
Hello. My question is... follows a lot along the lines of I too am an executive assistant, and I find it very difficult to stay focused and to stay on task. And my question, I guess, is for Adam with getting hired. The employers, because getting hired helps to find job placements for individuals with disabilities, what is the employer's expectations of the potential employees coming in? Do they have certain expectations or certain limitations or things that they're already expecting from individuals who they may hire?
I think their expectations are basically, their expectations for minimum qualifications are set up in their job posts. So at the end of the day, when you go to apply for a position, when the hiring manager actually takes a look at your application versus the type of job that they're hiring for, their expectations are set around that job post specifically. Now, there could be fluctuations and things like that. They'll probably give you a little bit of information about what they expect from this employee in that job. But a lot of the businesses, to be honest with you, that we're working with, they're not really judging on, oh, the person has a disability, can they do this specific job? They're actually looking for, can the person do this job? Based on their resume and requirements, it looks like they can. And if you ask for an accommodation, most of the businesses are very willing to do that. We actually work with them enough that they actually sign up for training about what is an accommodation, what should a hiring manager expect when hiring a person with a disability, how should they appropriately write job postings so a person with a good resume doesn't get eliminated off the bat. So they'll actually sign up for these training sessions, which we actually help them set up with one of our vendors. So I have to say that a lot of the businesses that we've been working with, I'm pleasantly surprised on how much they take advantage of that training and how much they're willing to try to adapt their corporate culture and their hiring routines to hire more people with disabilities.
I see. Thank you very much for answering. Thank you.
Sure.
At this time, it's Chris here. I want to jump in. It looks like we're at 7:15, and I want to extend a huge thank you to Sam Mankin and Adam Street for their wonderful presentations today. Thank you so much for taking your evening to educate us about your services and for your willingness to help answer any questions that couldn't be addressed live tonight. Thank you also to our listeners. We appreciate your interest in this program, and please do feel free to give us a call or an email if you have more questions. At this point, we're going to move on to the polling questions and end the presentation. So thank you all for attending. If you're online, please do remain online, and we'll move forward with the polling. Once again, have a great evening, and let us know if you have any more questions at 1-800-344-4867. And best wishes to everyone on their employment.
Thank you.
Call is now started.
Okay, it looks like we finished answering that one, so I'm going to move to the next question. And this question, if you're just joining us now, this question is, did you learn something new from this presentation? Responses are still coming in for that one. Thank you for answering. Your feedback is helpful. I'll wait a couple more seconds before we move on to the next one. Okay, the next question is, were the speakers and the information they presented easy to understand? Again, thank you for your responses to these questions. They're helpful for us in our program determinations. It looks like everyone's answered that, so I'm going to go ahead and move on to the last question. Last question is, did you learn something new from this presentation? Wonderful. Thank you for taking the time for answering those. That concludes the presentation. I hope you all have a wonderful evening. Thank you and good night.